WGR Sports Radio presents.
The Ohio State Supreme Court rules that boneless wings can have bones in them.
I saw this morning. I did not know what to think.
What?
It's just the style of cooking it?
Sports Talk Saturday.
Ohio Supreme Court ruled that foodies can't expect boneless wings to be completely bone-free.
They're boneless!
Stop it. Get some help.
Eat a bone with a bone in it, Deshaun.
But eat a bone with a bone in it?
On WGR.
This is open material. That's all I got to say. I'm boycotting Ohio. Well, I hope Deshaun ate a bone with a bone in it. He's getting the starting job. We'll see how that goes, I guess, you know? Ryan Fitzpatrick on a clip yesterday goes, yeah, he's going to fail. Just outright. Joe Calley, Derek Kramer, Sports Talk Saturday returns to the airwaves. It's been a minute.
We've had a little time off of this.
Mm-hmm.
And not very often that it is the duo is back.
No, the month of August was a tough one for that.
Month of August, late July, you know, we had ourselves some time.
We did. So it's good to be back. And
reunited and it feels so good.
I second that. Very good.
Shut up, Dan.
We've got some Week Zero college football action. Well, Pat Malacaro, the Bisons are on WGR today. It's pretty cool.
They are.
Yeah. So Pat will be joining us. We'll go over some Bisons baseball, some storylines from the season that he's foreseen and saw through now.
The race is in the wild card in the MLB.
Yes. Yes. Especially, I want to get to that in the MLB. It's going to be very interesting to chat with Pat.
And the Jays are still making me sad.
Yeah, you know, it was fun while it lasted last year for you, I guess. I'm a Yankees guy, so not fantastic. But
not fantastic, huh?
No, they could be better.
Talk to me about the oasis that is.
It could be better. Anyway, we'll talk with Pat a lot about baseball. The 53-man roster, as Dan said in the update, that's coming out on Sunday night. The coaches have to close that out and cut everybody and then move everyone they want to the practice squad. So we'll get into that. Maybe we'll predict the Bills 53-man roster a little bit, go through some of the position groups. Some are very interesting from preseason debuts and all of that. I did, actually, yes. I was glossing past it.
It's pronounced debuts.
Okay, all right. Anyway. there are some that are easy. Quarterback, we know what's going on there. One of them will not be on the team, will be the third active, but, the specialists, the punters, I mean, Dan said in the update there as well, Mish Wishnowski, as some are coining him, got the word no, so he's not going to be there.
I'm noticing that. That was cheeky there.
Yeah, not great.
Not quite the butts.
No, not quite. But a lot going on around the league. Tua last night was horrific, as per usual, so I don't know. We'll get into all of that. But, Derek, it's the first time in a long time. A lot of the, you know, preseason games for the Bills are exciting in a sense. After week one, was ready for regular season action. I don't know about you, though. I know you had to do the game casts, so you had to be excited for the last 2 weeks pretty much. But where are you at right now on football is back? Are you week one of the preseason was cool and now we were limping through or what?
The way that the Bills performed within the entirety of the preseason was the most rewarding of me having to work the preseason in years.
Mm-hmm.
Back in 2021, they went unbeaten in the preseason.
I mean, it's such a good thing, isn't it? Well, it means a lot about the regular season.
Okay. You haven't worked, and I am going to say this quite literally, every single preseason game, sometimes from start to finish. You did that with week one.
I did.
But it was a really good game.
Week two wasn't that great. Or week one wasn't, like, fantastic. It was good.
The starters were awesome. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
It was comically dominant in that way.
Well, yeah.
The score was the only thing that was not keeping up with how dominant the Bills were playing.
I think that's
more
so what I was thinking about, yeah.
But then week two, they're also dominant. Week three, Thursday, I had existential dread. I was like, they're going to stink. It's going to be awful. And I'm going to have to sit here and get through game cast and post game of a game that does not matter, and they're going to also play bad.
Mm-hmm.
Think like week two of last year in the preseason against Chicago, kind of bad, where there's like nothing fun. Get me the hell out of here.
Yeah, that was something I was thinking about a lot this week, is how different. They lost 38-0 against Chicago last season.
Dude, that one, having to do post game for that was the worst.
They lost 25-34 in week one against the Giants last year. Then they got shut out by the Bears. And then they won against Tampa Bay 23-19.
Yeah, so.
Which would later be what they lose to Houston by. But anyway, go ahead.
That's not, you know.
Just score Agami stuff, but go ahead.
But the fact that they were all so dominant and entertaining was a really nice breath of fresh air. Because, Joe, the off season within the Buffalo Bills, in terms of front office, upper management, stuff away from the field in particular, it didn't give you the warm and fuzzies, right? But the product on the field was the one thing I could feel good about.
We do have some breaking news off the bat here today.
Okay, here we go.
Per Jeremy Fowler, still with ESPN, the Bills are releasing veteran wide receiver Mecole Hardman Jr., per his sources.
Yeah, because that last game kind of did it.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's not a surprise. It's now a question of, will they practice squad him? I don't think they will. I think Dante Pettis.
I think he gets the practice squad nod before Mecole Hardman would.
I think Dante Pettis on Thursday night took his spot.
Yeah.
Because Hardman, with another bad drop, and then Pettis, in terms of a practice squad spot, gives you a veteran who can punt return if you need him to. And even though he was playing into the end of the final preseason game, did more for you as a receiver on his four targets than Hardman did.
Yeah.
Hardman had three drops in two games, all of which on third down.
His only good game was week one, where he had that end around, all of that. Like, that was where, okay, I could see Mecole Hardman. And then after that, he fell off the face of the earth. So,
and even in camp, Pettis was the one shining, not Hardman.
Right.
Initially in Rochester, was Dante Pettis.
It's always that Saints wide receiver, you know, that always comes in and is like, oh, this is good.
So if they're going to add a veteran wide receiver to their practice squad group, I think it is going to be Dante Pettis. Or it might be Trent Sherfield instead. But what happened on Thursday night was Hardman is not a Buffalo Bill. So I'm not surprised about that. It was also like one of the only bad things that you could really talk about from the preseason as a whole.
Right.
So, yeah. Jeremy Fowler reporting that the Bills are releasing Mecole Hardman as the cuts can begin with the Bills. Looks like we got another report here, which Mitch Wisnowski, which again, a 19-yard punt is going to do it.
Yeah.
So the Bills, it sounds like the cuts are going to start trickling in. It makes sense.
The pretty obvious ones definitely will. The ones that are a little tighter probably we won't know until Sunday night, I would bet. But this is – I always struggle with this, talking about this. I remember last year we talked about this a lot. The humanity of the sport.
Yes. Right?
These guys don't have jobs now. They might be on the practice squad, so that's one thing. But a guy like Mecole Hardman, who we're not projecting to be on the Bills practice squad, right? He's jobless. He lost his job after giving it all he could in the preseason and training camp and after being with the team last season for a little bit. So I think it's not – I don't even know what to say. I don't want to feel necessarily – super bad because they're NFL players. They'll land on their feet if they're good enough, a lot of them, right? But I think it's glossed over the fact that these guys are just losing jobs left and right for a little while here, for these couple days, right? They gave it everything they could, as I said, and they unfortunately don't make the cut for an NFL squad. It's the same could be said about any sport, right? Any roster cut down.
Matter of fact, Joe Brady post-game on Thursday said, you know, some of these guys may never play football again.
Mm-hmm. Jim Leonard earlier in the week said this is the hardest week. And it was one of those reasons because of this, attributed to having to cut down the roster and make selections on who's going to stay and who's going to go.
With Hardman, though, there's a little bit of a different conversation. Like Wisnowski, that writing was on the wall the minute that they drafted a punter.
Right.
You have to win that competition, and if you don't, if you don't win the competition, the tie is going to go to the rookie. So I think he knew, you know, when that second punt of his goes out of bounds after 19 yards. Speaking of these are people, it clocks some dude in the head. That 19-yard punt, that kind of probably stings.
Yeah.
But Wisnowski slams his helmet down like he knows it's probably over at that moment. And, you know, you do feel bad for a player when it's a moment that you can kind of see it and go, yeah, this is where it ends.
Yeah. I mean, shouldn't Tua be not to laugh about it. Tua should be at that point right now.
Here we
now,
are
anyway,
talking
though.
About the humanity of it, and you're laughing about Tua, who does have the highest dead cap hit for the Miami Dolphins this year. But, like, so there's a little bit of a difference between Tua and, you know, like, players that don't have as much money coming in from dead cap.
Sure.
But, you know, it's tough to see a player, like, in that moment know that you lost the job. Wisnowski, I think, you know, punters are something you need to pay attention for, be ready always. As a matter of fact, he comes in mid-season for the Bills last year.
Mm-hmm.
But Wisnowski, he's had a long career. He played in San Fran for years. Last year, he signs with the Bills with an injury to their original punter. So I think that's where, like, you know, it's the competitor. You know, Hardman's had an NFL career now. Like, as a receiver, you can kind of get paid even, like, you know, on the lower end of the roster, still get a good amount of money for yourself as well. But there's a question, though, in particular about Hardman. We have a punt return problem. And I think part of that problem could have been solved if not for the walking boot that Keon Coleman had to deal with. I think throughout the preseason, he would have been given opportunities. Unfortunately, he gets banged up in the first game against Carolina.
Yeah.
And the Bills don't even get to look at that avenue in the preseason. I had a caller yesterday on the Extra Point, which, oddly enough, he was defending Mecole Hardman for a roster spot, and now that's already not happening. But he mentioned, kind of like dismissed Coleman as an option. And I'm over here thinking he did it in college. He was actually pretty good at it in college. And it's an opportunity for him to create a little bit of a redemption arc if he's able to be the team's punt returner on a team that does not currently have one.
Right.
So Hardman being released does ultimately open up the question now. Okay, what are we doing?
And I think this is the biggest thing for me. A glaring issue, like you said, last season. It was, who's the punt returner? You had your kick returner. You had the all-pro kick returner.
Matter of fact.
They put Keon Coleman, and it sails 40 yards over his head on one of them. Khalil Shakir's all over the place. Like, you just don't know who's the best fit.
Matter of fact, you release Codrington.
Who was that?
Who was that for you?
He did have a drop problem last season, though. He was muffing a lot.
So, but Codrington's cut early in the season. And then they sign Hardman. But Hardman even muffs a punt.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like he's been anything special. The Bills do have a punt returner problem. But with Hardman being released, it is the first step to the question of what are they doing at punt returner? Are they going to let Coleman and Shakir handle the duties for now? Are they going outside of the roster? Is somebody going to have a roster spot on Sunday and then lose it by Tuesday? That is something that has to be accounted for. And until we get answers, even in terms of the injury timeline with Keon Coleman and Khalil Shakir, because those two have been missing practices, and a good amount of them,
mm-hmm.
those are your de facto punt returners.
Right.
Are they injured?
That's the question.
Holy, you really have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Ray Davis, when he muffed that punt on Thursday night, probably cost someone a spot. Because now they need to put an investment into the position.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if it's going to be something where they find a returner again, like they did a couple years ago in Codrington, and they let it go from there. I hope they don't have to use a roster spot specifically on it again.
Mm-hmm.
And this is going to probably upset some people. I hope that Keon Coleman is good enough to go. That he's handling the punt return duties to start the season.
Right.
Because he can do it. I can trust him with it.
I think he's looked the best at it.
He also creates a big play element. His rookie year, he leads the team in 20-plus plays. He leads the team in big plays in receiving 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, low bar based on the receiver room. But he does it. And it's not just on these jump balls. It's catch and runs. Coleman had a pretty good yards after catch in his rookie year, which is why we were all feeling pretty hopeful about him last year. Because he had a really good promise to him in his rookie year. There were a couple down games. But even in that Houston game, he's the one that brings him back in it a couple years ago. It's his catch and run that puts them in the end zone and makes it a game again. On the day that Allen goes like 9 of 32 or whatever it was. 9 of 30. But it's Coleman making the big play.
Yeah.
Coleman can do this. And I have confidence in it. Which is weird to say considering the perception around him.
I'm with you on that. I think it's a weird feeling. Like you said, the perception around him is so negative all the time where it's kind of like, can you really feel that much better about him? But I'm really, even in the receiving game this season, if he's healthy, the pressure's off for him to be that X receiver, right? You have that now. That's DJ Moore. If he can just contribute soundly, I think the perception of him goes up significantly. And I think punt returning is going to help him with that if he's healthy and able to do it. Because I think it is something. A guy can't get separation, right? Guess what you don't have to do on a punt return? Get separation. You're already separated. You're just going to run into the crowd with the ball.
Sometimes the punt is so good it creates your separation for
right.
him.
Right. And he's a yak guy. What is that? What is that?
Big body, hard to tackle even.
Yes.
You can use that to your advantage with a little bit of the short-term explosion. Because
sure.
like you said, separation, that's longer-term running within NFL standards.
Right.
But acceleration is not quite as much of an issue. It's just long speed. Does that mean he'll ever house call a punt return? Maybe not. But is it better than what I have to do right now at punt returner? Yes. It's the best option that doesn't cost you a roster spot and doesn't cost you assets potentially to trade for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not throwing David Putney in the trade deal.
David Putney. Don't even start with draft day references. Do not even begin to do that.
What are you talking about? We have a draft today, Joe.
We do. The Odyssey is drafting today, ladies and gentlemen.
So I want David Putney just because I feel like it.
I'm drafting Mecole Hardman. You cannot stop me.
Okay, go. Legitimately, I won't stop you.
Yeah.
Dan.
That's my last pick.
Go for
go
it.
Go ahead, Dan.
Go ahead.
Take him.
Should I take him in the first round? Should I just throw everybody off?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That would help everyone else. Yes. Yeah. I agree.
No, because you're going to give me a migraine. And well, I'm not going to be able
Joe
to
Joe also wants me to do this because he drafts like two picks later than me. So an extra person for him on the board isn't that bad.
It's huge. No, I'm in a lot of trade talks right now, actually, in this first segment.
The biggest thing you would do if you ever did, if anybody did something like that, is it would discombobulate me so much, I wouldn't draft.
You let the computer give up. The rest.
I would just get up and leave.
Just like, guys, I'm done.
Hey, nice seeing
Give me my money back. I'm done.
Nice seeing everyone. What the heck was that? I'm out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I'll let the computer take care of it.
Yeah.
Because that's where, I can't be in a can't be in a room with a person that I don't respect anymore.
Yeah.
Oh, that's okay.
That's true. But anyway, you can draft David Putney. You can draft Mecole Hardman, whatever you want to do. That'd be crazy.
You've been asking about a trade, so now I want David Putney just because I feel like
Well, I think I've got – I'm in the midst of multiple trade discussions right now. But anyway, not to talk about all our fantasy football teams.
Yeah, ready? Nobody cares about your fantasy team.
Right.
Let's move on.
Right. So
– oh, my God. College football stadiums are so
College football
pretty,
is starting up, all of it. But yeah, I think Coleman, truthfully – in the best possible way, will subvert expectations this year.
Yes.
Because expectations are so in the gutter for him.
They're so
down.
If
he does five things well this season, and he's not a... What would be okay for Coleman? The punt returning, if he's very good at it, right? If he's good at punt returning, at least serviceable compared to what the Bills have had in years past. And then how many yards on the season you think for him where you'd be happy? 500?
Give me to his rookie year.
What was it, 600-ish?
I'm going to confirm that for you real quick, but I do think it was around the 600-yard area.
Mm-hmm.
But, look, again,
and he did that with missing games. If he did that throughout the entire season, I'd be happy with that.
Yeah, he's not going to wow anyone at this point right now, and I don't expect him to. But, last year, it's only 404. You need better than that, right?
Yeah, and a lot of those yards came in week one.
And a lot of those yards do indeed come in week one against Baltimore. He gets close to 600 yards. It's 556 in 13 games because he is injured.
Yeah, the wrist injury, yes. Yeah,
thanks, Poyer.
I know, right?
You broke the rookie.
Broke him.
So, because he even said after that rookie year, like, I didn't like how I handled myself after the injury. I didn't like how, you know, like, I responded emotionally to it. It was a very upfront answer from him of like, hey, I don't like how I handled this.
Yeah.
A very emotionally mature answer. And that's kind of where last season really gets at people, because that off season leading into last year, he has a lot of emotionally mature answers. He's trying to stop, you know, the stigma of the getting the coat from Kohl's and getting the cookies. And so he sounds very focused. And then the literal opposite happens in season.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are we doing?
Yeah. And you even heard this season there's been a pivot from that. Spencer Brown talking about the locker next. They're next to each other. And there's a lot less chaos going on.
Everybody's not at his locker. It's not the party scene in the locker room.
Yeah.
It's not the place to go hang out.
Right.
Which is good. It tells you that the guy is focused. He's ready to go. And I think you're right. Expectations are going to be subverted in a positive manner because their expectations are pretty much on the ground.
They're on the bottom step, and any step above that is a positive thing.
And I think Coleman's going to be able to do that, and I would like to see him get opportunities at punt returner because at his best, he is a guy who can create some yards after contact, yards after catch.
Mm-hmm.
He is a guy that there's opportunity there. Try to get him the football in some free moments where sometimes Coleman's hardest thing about him is he doesn't catch the easy pass.
Mm-hmm.
He'll catch the difficult ones.
Well, yeah, he'll moss somebody or whatever, but he won't. If it hits him right in the hands and he's uncovered, it's going to drop.
Sometimes there's a slant pattern that he drops it, and you're just like, oh, you were wide open, man.
Mm-hmm.
But on a punt return, you can get a little bit of the ability, the breaking tackles, and try him out in open space a little bit.
Yeah.
Why not?
Well, that's the thing, even with him, they've been using him in the slot. Something he did well in preseason week one against the starters is what Diggs used to do best for Allen. When he's moving around in the pocket, who's following him?
And Coleman even did that well in his rookie year when he was on the outside.
Right.
His touchdown against the Jets. Yes, I know it's the Jets. But 2 years ago, Jets defense was not that much of a joke.
No.
Not that much.
A little bit better.
But not the no interception group of last year.
I mean, A.J. Epinesa did have more picks than Sauce Gardner in one season a couple years ago, so I don't know.
But he's still dealing with Sauce Gardner.
Right.
But who's following Allen around in the scramble drill? It's Coleman.
Right.
To a point where Allen also finds a play where Coleman gets himself open. He's not on the same side as Josh Allen on the field.
Throws crossbody.
Allen goes crossbody yeet, and Coleman just goes, all right, this is coming to me. I can high point this. I got it.
Right. And that's preseason week one this year, too, in the end zone, his touchdown.
Scramble drill.
Mm-hmm.
He knows where to get himself. He's smarter than people like to allude he is.
Well, he didn't do that very well last season. That's one thing I remember we said we wanted more from him.
It was a real loss of focus from him last year.
Mm-hmm.
And it did two things. One, it put a lot of the negative connotations to him, which is deserved.
Mm-hmm.
But two, now accidentally, allows him to really become a surprise this year for a lot of people, because the expectations are so down. The fact that he's already probably considered a bust heading into year three.
Right.
Even as a second round pick. You now have a chance to just settle yourself into the bottom of this depth chart.
Right.
Really just settle in.
No noise down there.
No noise. There's no noise down there. If you stay focused, and I think that you can. Again, I like the potential still. I think it's still there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that last year's last year.
And we've heard Joe Brady say the best thing that's happened to him is me being the head coach. We'll see if that actually helps things along
and
here.
And hopefully it all stays in last year for him.
Yeah, hopefully. 803-0550 and a number to call. How you feel about Keon Coleman? We started talking about the Bills cutting Mecole Hardman Jr., also Mitch Wishnowsky. So two names so far, 53-man. Decided on Sunday, tomorrow, so keep your eyes out for that. We'll keep our eyes out if there's any other trickling cuts that come down the wire. And we got Pat Malacaro coming up in about a half hour, go through some Bisons baseball, some MLB, the wild card race, all of that. We're getting into the sweet spot of baseball season for me where I really start to get into it. And again, 803-0550, the number for you. Jump in on anything. We're going to talk about Connor Hellebuck as well because that has resurfaced in a big way in a personal statement from him. over the last couple of days. Joe Calley, Derek Kramer, this is Sports Talk Saturday on WGR.
It's the hardest week in the NFL. I've been on both sides, right? I've made rosters. I've been cut from rosters. Everyone understands what happens at the end of this week, where there's a lot of players that are in the building that there's not spots for. And it's tough when you're on a really good team, team that knows how to win, that has depth, has some pretty defined roles in some areas. As coaches and players, I think as long as you're professional about it and go about your business, it is one of those things. It doesn't get easier. It's always difficult because there's guys that have earned the right to be here that just don't have a spot. Your goal as a coach is like, how many of these players make it on a roster?
Jim Leonard on this being one of the toughest weeks in the NFL. Trade talks lighting up in this, the Odyssey League in the break here.
Nobody cares,
but lighting up. It's fantasy football season. It's football season. Week zero of college football underway today in about a half hour. So when we're talking with Pat Malacaro, we're going to get our first glimpse of college football action.
I'm eating good today. And also, like, so they got Penn State on the board right now on college football game day.
Mm-hmm.
Penn State really intrigues me now because of the debacle that was the end of James Franklin's tenure at Penn State, where originally it was he's the guy that can't get over the hump. Penn State can't beat these top 10 teams. They can't make it far in the little playoff, but they're always a good team. But then what do? They just bring in Matt Campbell from Iowa State.
Mm-hmm.
He brings 24 players from ISU over to Penn State. And all of a sudden, a Penn State team that received heavy damage from Franklin's firing and then summarily hired at Virginia Tech. So all the commits that were going to head to him are heading to Virginia Tech instead, so they lost a recruiting class.
Mm-hmm.
I need Zach here for this.
I know. I you're speaking to somebody college football.
But also, this is when Zach gets deep into it, and I'm like, uh-huh. We're making picks for the American Conference yesterday, Joe. I'm like, I don't know enough about that.
You're just making blind picks?
I'm just going to follow your lead on the American Conference. Why not?
Yeah.
I made picks of my own for all the others, but like that one, I'm like, I don't know about the American Conference enough to make an educated decision here. But to finish on this point, all of a sudden, though, Penn State just casually back into the top 25 and a team that I really suspect could be a dark horse for the Big Ten this year.
I was thinking about this. I kind of want to drive to Penn State for a whiteout game. I'm not a fan of the team or anything like that.
Go to any college stadium once in your life.
Right.
Hang on. And this is where I desperately need UB to get a new stadium set up. Because
I think the track is really what the problem is at UB.
It is
and
the
it's,
problem.
I get it. Logistically, you have a track and field team. It all works there for you. I'm not trying to shut that down. But I think a lot of people I see complaining about the stadium online is only about the track.
People are so far away from the field because the track exists.
Yeah.
And to get a college football feel, you need to have that energy, that closeness. Get to one of those types of college stadiums, though, in your lifetime, like the big conference types. Even the Carrier Dome in Syracuse. Get to one.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever?
No.
Joe, the reason I became a Purdue supporter is because one of my closest friends, he went there, and I attended a game. They got walloped 56-14 by Denard Robinson in Michigan.
But
didn't care.
But you were at in the
Ross,
building?
Yeah. Ross Aid Stadium is immaculate, and it's Purdue. Got to get to a major conference stadium. I mean, Penn State's one of those. Happy Valley.
Mm-hmm.
That is relatively close to here. Notre Dame, of course, that's obviously a little bit more of a drive.
I would drive for that, though. I feel like that's an experience in itself. Like, I would like to get to some.
Zach's told me about Austin, Texas. And everything there.
He's a big Hook'em guy, that's right.
He is a big Hook'em guy, but, you know, he's made the trek down there.
Yeah.
Major college stadiums beat the absolute daylights off of pro stadiums in terms of the feel, the energy, and the prestige of football. Like, the Bills' new stadium is modern, everything like that. College stadiums really still hold in the spirit of the game that it is. College football is going away from its spirit.
Mm-hmm.
We have to talk more about the rules and everything about that.
We do.
But the stadiums still give you that college town feel. And that's the problem with UB, and it's not their fault. Because there's a couple of other places like this. Like Pitt. They play at Acushnet.
Mm-hmm.
And it really damages that field. But anyway, I digress.
Yeah.
But UB plays in a Bills-crazed city. It's one of the hardest things for their football team to contend with. So it's really hard to really get a football-crazed fan base within college football for UB because of the Bills and the presence that the fan base brings for the Bills. But it's why Columbus, Ohio, for example, that is Buckeye country.
Yeah. I want to see a flag planted there. Like, I got to go for a big game there. Remember when all that went down?
The horseshoe is incredible when you look at it from afar.
Yeah, just on TV,
the
they're
The big
incredible.
House in Michigan. Like, so, yes, make sure at minimum once in your life, get to a college stadium.
Okay.
And I really want UB to get some renovations done. You want to know how to do that, though?
Hmm.
We'll talk more about that in a little bit.
Win?
there is another step. Because there is a story that I'd been following over the last 3 weeks.
Okay, I'm actually very interested in this. I think I've seen glimpses of this, so yes, I would like to get into this. But first, we go to the phones. Get connected to our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Brian in Arcade, it's Joe, it's Derek. What you got for us?
Hey, man. So unless Keon Coleman's been working at Jordy Nelson's speed camp or Christian McCaffrey's track coach, I really don't see a whole lot of use for him. I think he's a bust. I think he is, he might be useful on broken plays or near the red zone, but in terms of a usable player, I don't see why you'd take anyone off the field so that Coleman can go on slot or outside. Like, he can't get off of press coverage. He's been exactly what the scouting report said he was going to be. Hasn't played any different. And then on Hellebuck, I think you know where the Jets are going to go. They're going to want your good young forwards, and I wouldn't trade any of those guys. We've stunk for years, and that's about the only reward we've got out of it is those top 15 picks. Hellenius, Kulik, you know the group.
Oslin and Quinn,
and I have no interest in getting rid of those guys. And, well, Sam Carrick and Justin Danforth, career journeyman, can't make the roster at the end. Cool, they're the first ones out. They'll get a jersey when somebody gets hurt. But I'm not interested in that. Well, what about McLeod? He's going to play on the fourth line. Cool. I have the fastest fourth line in the league with Krebs, McLeod, and then Malenstein. That's only a positive thing. I know you're paying him a lot of money, but that's what's good when you have a lot of rosters. To me, Tuck was the prime path, and as soon as you didn't re-sign Tuck, then to me the Sabres pivoted, and it was sign everybody else back. And that's exactly what they did. You got to see what that is before you go give assets for Hellebuck, who's 33, and Paul Hamilton rightly says, you know, there's a lot of risk there. You can reassess at the trade deadline if it's really goalie that's holding you back.
Yeah, Brian, you got a lot in there.
Yeah.
Let's get over it a step at a time here. Just so that before I shift into Sabres mode, because when I do that, it's dangerous and you got to really, like, pull me out of it. The Coleman point. What's more potential broken play than a punt return?
Well, sure. I would agree with that. That was my thought as soon as he said that. That's pretty much a broken play drawn up broken.
It's drawn up to be broken play, and you try to thrive in the chaos that is a punt return.
Mm-hmm. But he's right. We did talk about that at the end of last segment where he is valuable in the red zone on broken plays like that.
Yes.
So I get that, but that is value.
It is value. It is something.
I'm not trying to die on the Keon Coleman Hill, by the way. I just think there is value to him a little bit.
What it does, though, is it tells you that there is still something there. If he's making the smart plays to find himself open in scramble drills, that tells me there's something there.
Mm-hmm.
There's a player that understands the game. I'm not here to say that Keon Coleman is going to be a valuable player within years of this team. He's probably only a one contract and done, and then he's going to be around the NFL. Try to get something out of it in these next 2 years while he's still on his rookie deal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that he can because there's something there. There's something that tells me he understands some things pretty well. The physical attributes, because Brian mentions, you know, unless he's gone to a speed camp or something, that's never going to go away. And that has more to do with the general manager taking the draft profile on the player and ignoring some of the attributes that could hold him back. But let's not pretend like his draft class has been a real boon for anybody. Ladd McConkey's the miss.
Yeah.
End of list.
Xavier Leggett's a bust right now, arguably, you could
all
say.
All the receivers that have been taken after, quite frankly, Brian Thomas, and even he had a terrible second year, have not really been worth the attention, save for McConkey. McConkey's the exception.
Right.
That draft class, we got wide about. We were hornswoggled.
Remember going in?
Leggett, not great. Worthy, one-trick pony. Adonai Mitchell, already off of a team. Jalen Polk, retired.
Yeah.
Like, we don't need to pretend like this.
That was a masterful wide receiver class that we got a bust out of.
The 2024 receivers class became fool's gold. Because now, even Malik Nabers, what is he going to be now?
Well,
Marvin
that's the
Harrison
question.
Marvin Harrison Jr. is the first receiver taken, and he's awful.
He can't hold on to a football at all. It's a nightmare scenario. It truly is. For everyone who drafted a receiver outside the Chargers.
The only one that has had some year-to-year consistency right now is Adunze.
Rome, that's right. Yeah.
And even he's not getting enough of the attention because Luther Burden showed up onto the scene.
Yeah, and Colston Loveland, right? That receiving room is stacked.
It's so stacked that they got rid of DJ Moore, so now maybe Adunze will continue on with the consistency, but he's not even seen as the consensus number one guy.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we can't act like that class was...
The 2024 receivers class became fool's gold.
Yeah, it wasn't platinum. It was fool's gold, as you said.
It's fool's gold. I think that's great. We all got duped, hornswoggled, whatever you want to use as the word. Make up a word if you want to in terms of, you know...
Any word about being misled is accurate in this situation.
You can make up a word.
Yeah.
And it would work. That's not even a word, and I agree with you.
Yeah, seriously.
So...
I think
we've been speckledorfed. That's what it was.
Speckledorfed. That's what. Oh my gosh. Anyway, Coleman, I think he has an opportunity to not be a bust. I get it. I understand why people are calling him a bust. I do think there's room to grow there still, though. That's not necessarily in bust territory. Brian got to a lot of other points, including Connor Hellebuck. We've got a lot of time left in the show. We're going to get to that. We'll give that its time, I promise. But we'll get to business on the other side, the booty cheek of the week. And then Pat Malacaro joins us at noon. Sports Talk Saturday, Joe Calley, Derek Kramer. You're listening to WGR. Welcome back to Sports Talk Saturday. Joe Calley, Derek Kramer here with you. We're back, and booty cheek of the week is back as well. I'll start. Dan Dale's going to get in on this, too, if I'm not mistaken. Good Good Golf and Callaway released an advertisement. Good Good Golf filmed it, and then Callaway okayed it. And it is one of the Good Good Golf members, I believe it's Garrett Clark, running over to a woman, grabbing his driver, and shoving her to the ground and yelling, "Don't touch my driver," in a very low and menacing voice while she's on the ground. Not really a great look there. For Callaway greenlighting that, first of all.
Yeah.
Where did that... They changed the way their ad process was... done, and it got greenlit somehow, and good for filming that. They say it's based off the movie Obsession. Have you seen this?
No.
The recent one where you break that thing in half and then you make the person crazily in love with you, but they like start hurting themselves because you're not loving them as much. Anyway,
so he's doing that for the driver?
The driver is the thing, yes.
No.
Right. So, just a bad look overall for Callaway.
So dumb.
And Good Good Golf. Callaway cut them entirely, even though they greenlit it, which I still think is wrong on their part. And
well,
then
the probably got fired there too.
Well, the PGA is also cutting a tie from an event that Good Good was a sponsor of or whatever. So, a lot of fallout there, but just not a great ad, not a great look for either company. That's my booty cheek of the week. Go ahead.
All right. Mine's a little bit more involved, so... Dan, there's one that I'm partial participant. Actually, we're all partial participants for you. You
we are very, very much part. We're not partial. We are all participants.
We were all active participants.
We all tried the thing that
that I brought in.
We were warned about.
You brought it in, Joseph.
I spent money on that.
And it was the stupid Oreo chicken and waffles because we have to try new Oreo flavors for some reason. When they have the glorious pot of the greatest cookie, one of the greatest cookies ever made, and they're like, let's try something else with it.
I don't mind Oreo coming up with different flavors for like varietals.
No, because I have the other two that came in that three pack with that one at home, the banana pudding and the fried Oreo, and they're both very good.
The fried Oreo is great.
The thing is, they've already made some variants that are also really good. The peanut butter Oreo is fantastic.
The mint Oreo is great.
I'm not a mint guy, but I know that that's something that like that could probably hit
the birthday cake ones.
Birthday cake's okay.
How dare you?
All right, we're getting off track.
Double stuff. You know, like they've got their variants already. Those even hit.
The golden lemon Oreos.
Yep. Why are we putting frosting that tasted like a McNugget that it knows it shouldn't have been there?
I think it was chicken broth frosting with like a maple frosting.
That's probably, oh my God.
No, it wasn't maple. The maple came from the cookie because that's supposed to mimic
the maple waffle. Actually came from one part of one side of the frosting. There's two types of the frosting, and this is where my opinion,
that's even worse. Yeah, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, this is where
the
my
cookie
opinion,
was just waffle.
Yes, the cookie was the waffle portion.
I got the syrup from that part.
There's the maple portion. It's probably where the maple frosting was touching. Anyway.
Anyway. The chemical makeup of the cookie.
The chemical makeup of the cookie.
We're breaking down the chicken and waffles cookie right now. And my booty cheek is going to be something that we're going to have to do into a full segment.
God awful.
But this cookie. Because Oreo does this. It's on the box. It says, twist, lick, vote.
Mm-hmm.
And so
don't follow it.
Don't do it.
Don't do it.
Don't listen to their instruction.
Please.
The cookie overall is below average, but edible.
Big cookie lies to you here.
It's Oreo that lies to us, not even just big cookie. Even though Oreo probably is big cookie. Anyway, I digress. There is one side of the frosting that's delightful. It's maple. I, you know, someone that lives near Canada, I'm probably like defaulting to maple is good.
Mm-hmm.
The other frosting is an abomination that I never want anyone to ever have to deal with. And I know that I probably shouldn't be openly slandering a product on our airwaves.
I mean,
but I ate the cookie, even when I ate the cookie, as it traveled down.
Oh no. We're getting too specific.
Too far, back
the energy. The energy just felt wrong.
Yeah. Didn't feel right. I get you.
It's an acknowledgement of, no, we never should have eaten this.
Pat Malacara on the other side. We got to go. Sports Talk Saturday.